before the North Country temperatures around 25 there. This is NHPR.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, known as REGGIE, will get its first major report card this year. The cap-and-trade program was created to reduce carbon emissions from power plants. It began in late 2008 after several years of negotiations among 10 northeastern states, including New Hampshire. Under their agreement, the states promised to conduct a review of the program 3 years in to see how it's working and whether it might be improved. But as REGGIE officials gear up for this review process, other entities have already conducted their own assessments and have reached different conclusions. A November study from the New Hampshire Department of Environmental Services finds REGGIE is working smoothly and as intended. Another analysis from a Boston consulting firm concludes REGGIE's had a positive economic impact on the region, although New Hampshire benefited a little bit less than its partner states. And earlier last year, an examination of REGGIE by the free market think tank, the Josiah Bartlett Center of New Hampshire, suggests the program has serious flaws and deserves a healthy dose of skepticism when the legislature looks at it in the new session. Today in The Exchange, REGGIE under review. We'll look at what the program's done so far for New Hampshire, how it might be fixed, or if it should be nixed. Let's hear from you. After 3 years of REGGIE, how would you assess it? Should New Hampshire stick with REGGIE, revise it, or repeal it? Has your organization or business benefited from a REGGIE grant? And are there other ways to reduce carbon besides these complicated cap-and-trade systems? Give us a call. Tell us what you think. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. With me in studio, two gentlemen who've been looking at this issue for a long time. Grant Bossy is here, lead investigator for the Josiah Bartlett Center for Public Policy, editor of the Center's New Hampshire Watchdog site. And Grant, nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Also with us, Jim O'Brien, director of government relations for the New Hampshire chapter of the Nature Conservancy. And Jim, welcome back. Good to see you too.
Good to see you too.
Well, and Jim, I'll start with you. Let's get back to basics for just a couple minutes before we head into the current assessments and discussions around REGGIE. This is often described, Jim, as a market-based cap-and-trade program. In the simplest terms possible, if you could please, just describe how this works.
Sure, Laura. So REGGIE is a market-based cap-and-trade program. There's a regional cap that's placed on power plant emissions of carbon pollution. New Hampshire has a certain amount of credits that they trade and can sell. Emitters buy those allowances on the marketplace, and every ton of carbon pollution needs to have a credit bought for it. The revenues that come to the state from the sale of those allowances come to the state, and the state can use them across the region in different ways. Here in New Hampshire, 100% of the allowance proceeds go to energy efficiency programs. Those funds are administered by the Public Utilities Commission, and they go to a wide range of programs and projects to reduce emissions and to save costs on heating fuels and on electricity.
So you're kind of attacking this idea of carbon emissions on two fronts then, Jim. One is doling out energy efficiency grants so homes and businesses and schools get more efficient, use less energy. But the other is this, again, cap and trade system. And let me see if I've got this right, and you guys can correct me. So you own power plant A, Jim, and Grant owns power plant B. And Grant's power plant puts out less carbon than yours. So you have to buy the right to emit more carbon from Grant.
Not necessarily from Grant, but from a pool of allowances that are sold on the regional level. Grant can buy extra credits, and I can buy them from him, but that hasn't really seemed to have happened. It's really a pool of allowances that you're buying, and then you true up at the end of 3 years to make sure that all your emissions have an allowance to pay for them.
I see. So you're not buying directly from Grant's power plant, but you're buying from a pool of carbon credits from various utilities around the 10-state region?
That's correct.
Grant, go ahead, jump in and give us your best sort of example or analysis.
Well, it's kind of like pay as you throw. If you're in Concord now, you got to pay for every garbage bag, right? Well, now, if you're a power plant, you have to pay for every ton of carbon dioxide you put into the air. And it's really technical how that's assessed, but essentially you've got to pay for every ton of carbon dioxide you put into the air. So if I put out, I manage to upgrade my equipment and my power plant is super efficient, or I put in solar cells or whatever so that I have fewer carbon dioxide emissions, I have to pay less to REGGIE than Jim does. And suddenly his costs go up and I become more competitive. And if I've already bought all these carbon credits on the open market, turns out I don't need them, I can then sell them to Jim. And if he's desperate, I can charge a premium for that. So the idea is we cap the total amount of garbage bags. And then if I've got extra garbage bags, I get to sell them to Jim and make some money because he didn't buy them.
Well, then that's an apt description for me since I live in Concord and we do have pay-as-you-throw. So if I decide to be a good citizen and recycle, 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 Grant, and I end up only having a teeny bit of trash at the end of the week, I save money. And, you know, people like Jim who don't bother recycling end up spending more money. And that's the same thing with the
right,
cap and
right.
trade
and,
system.
And some other cap and trade systems that have been contemplated nationally, the Lieberman plan, for example, a couple of years ago, would give all these power producers all the credits at the beginning. They wouldn't have to buy them. They'd be given credits. They'd be given a big pile of trash bags for their carbon. And then if they reduce their emissions, they could essentially get it as a revenue source. Based on historic emissions. So RGGI doesn't do that. It doesn't look at what you've – it doesn't care how much you've emitted in the past. It's only forward-looking. We want you to pay for every ton you put in. There's a couple of carve-outs based on historic emissions because New Hampshire had a precursor program and they didn't want to punish PSNH because it took some steps early. But essentially, you have to pay from ton one of carbon dioxide that you put into the air.
And I know you've been critical of the program, Grant. I want to ask you about that in just a minute. But just to make this crystal clear again, so I can see how RGGI might reduce carbon emissions, Jim, through what you and Grant have talked about. But RGGI has also been touted as an economic boost for the Northeast economy. How is that?
Sure. Well, it's really in the investments made from the auction proceeds and how the state's been investing those dollars. Here in New Hampshire, it's been mostly through a grant process that have gone to municipalities, have gone to businesses to help them invest in sort of energy-saving projects. One of the interesting things about RGGI is that it's a fuel-neutral account, so it's being paid in by electric users, but it can be used for energy efficiency retrofits on homes and on businesses that save electricity, but also can save on heating fuels, which we all know living in the Northeast is one of our most expensive line items in our budgets. So every year about $2.5 billion is exported from the state of New Hampshire to pay for home heating fuels. So the more we can reduce those costs, they stay in our local economy, and if more money in individuals' pockets are going to spend it on other things without leaving the Northeast, which doesn't have, you know, oil as a natural commodity.
So economic benefits, Jim, would be people saving money on their heating bills, but also, you know, a school says, hey, we got a RGGI grant to retrofit our school. That creates jobs for that company that comes in and does it.
That's correct.
Okay, so what are the economic drawbacks, Jim? And then Grant, I want to hear from you, too.
The economic drawbacks of RGGI?
Yes.
I'm not sure there are. I mean, there's not really the studies that have come out have shown these are all net benefits to the states that are participating in these in RGGI. You know, there is a cost, a slight increase in cost on electric rates. A couple of years ago, the PUC said it was about 30 cents for the average public service company customer.
30 cents a year 30 or a cent, month?
30 cents a month per customer. For small businesses, it was about $3 a month. So there is a cost, but the benefits of the program outweigh the cost, according to the studies that have looked at this.
Grant, what do you think?
Well, the costs are about $35 million over 3 years. The benefits are about $35 million over 3 years. It's simply a transfer of money from electric rates to a smaller set of people that get money handed out through the RGGI program. And the studies that look at this completely ignore the money going into the RGGI program. They assume that there's this great multiplier of economic magnificence that happens when the Public Utilities Commission writes you a check, that it just jumpstarts the economy and everybody gets employed. They completely – and they just assume that. They don't have evidence of it. They assume it. And then they ignore the economic draw that slightly higher electric rates have.
So the Public Utilities Commission, they're the ones that hand out these energy efficiency grants to businesses, homes, schools, hospitals, whatever?
In New Hampshire, most of the money has been handed out through the Public Utilities Commission. The legislature has clawed back a little bit. There's some money for weatherization. And last year, in 2010, when we were in a big budget deficit, John Lynch kind of grabbed a little bit of money out of the RGGI pot to help balance the budget. But economically, it's all the same. You're taking money out of one part of the economy. And whether the PUC hands it out or the legislature hands it out, you're putting money back somewhere else. It is energy efficiency isn't necessarily efficient. Because if it was, people would do it on their own without a subsidy from REGI.
Well, and Jim, I know you want to get in on this. So, Grant, your issue is, look, you know, this is a case supposed to be market-based, but really it's a situation where government is picking winners and losers.
Yeah. It's raising all our electric rates a little bit in order to lower some people's electric rates a whole lot. And some of those people, Stonyfield Yogurt, a big company here in New Hampshire, they got a bunch of money to make their process more efficient. Now, they're owned by Dannon. Dannon International could pay to put in insulation and new steam boilers and do all that. Dartmouth College got $300,000. Dartmouth College can afford to do this on their own. Our electric rates went up a little bit, not a lot, went up a little bit so that Dartmouth College, where I went to school, so I'm kind of happy about that, could lower their electric bill a whole lot. It's a transfer program. And whether you think that's a good idea or a bad idea, that's what it is. And every analysis, every report that says that there's this huge net benefit simply assumes that Dartmouth College will be able to spend that $300,000 in a more economically stimulative way than each of us with an extra $5 in our pocket.
What do you think, Jim? This has been a big critique of REGI. Who gets those grants?
Well, I want to take a little step back because what the studies actually show on the economic side is for every $1 invested in energy efficiency, there's about a $3 payback over time. So the $32 million that's been invested in REGI, the studies are showing there's about $100 million per savings for that. And really, if you think about it, when you know if we all own old homes and we're investing in some weatherization, you know, your bill goes down, and the bill doesn't go down once. There's a lifetime savings from that investment in your insulation that pays back over time. So energy efficiency pays off. I mean, these are proven. The city of Rochester got a REGI grant to do some work on their wastewater treatment facility. Their electric bill was about $25,000 per month to pay for their wastewater aeration facility. Because of the REGI grant and some work that they did, they got that cost down to about somewhere in the $18,000 per month range. So that's a savings of $7,000-$8,000 per month for the city of Rochester to put back, lowers the cost for taxpayers to pay for that. That's a savings every month that happens.
Well, and Grant, and I want to jump in. We're going to take a very short break. When we come back, we'll talk more about the economic benefits and drawbacks of REGI. Also, take your calls at 1-800-892-6477.
Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, from the NEEF Network Organizations, a statewide leader assisting students and parents planning for college. Information at nhheaf.org. And from the Society for the Protection of New Hampshire Forests, working to conserve 5,800 acres around the balsams in Dixville Notch. ForestSociety.org/balsams. More on reviewing the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative in New Hampshire on the Exchange on NHPR and at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, New Tensions Between the United States and Iran. New Hampshire weather for today, turning partly sunny across most of the state, cloudy with some scattered snow showers in the North Country. Highs ranging from 25 north to 35 degrees in the south. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking once again at the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, known as REGI, and its economic and environmental impact on the Granite State. We invite you to join us, 1-800-892-6477, or send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org. By the way, The Exchange is now on Facebook. We hope you'll go to our page, join the conversation there. You can call us right now at 1-800-892-6477. After 3 years of REGI, how would you assess it? Do you think New Hampshire should stick with REGI or take a serious look at it in the legislature this year? Our number, 1-800-892-6477, the email exchange@nhpr.org. And Jim O'Brien, Grant Bossy, some calls coming in, but I did want to give you the chance, Grant, to jump in on what Jim had said. He said, look, every dollar you invest in energy efficiency has a $3 economic payback.
Yeah, the studies don't find that there's a 3-to-1 payback. The studies assume there's a 3-to-1 payback. And if there are a 3-to-1 payback for every energy efficiency project, well, we'd all be spending thousands and thousands of dollars on insulation and weatherization every year. There's a capital cost. You got to pay up front. It gets paid back over time. And in some cases, that's a really good idea. In some cases, it doesn't pay for itself quickly enough. And so what Reggie does is says, we're going to help you pay those capital costs up front, and then you'll get the payback over time. Whether or not that's economically efficient varies widely case by case. But none of these studies that say these huge multi-billion dollar benefits from Reggie, none of these studies actually look at those cases. They just assume it's a 3-to-1 payback for every dollar you spend on a Reggie project.
Well, getting away from the specific numbers, Grant, is there an economic payback for energy efficiency? I mean, intuitively, it seems like, gosh, if I'm spending $100 less on my home heating, I can go out to dinner in Concord once a month.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes there is. Sometimes it's worth putting, you know, if you've got a really super drafty attic, it's worth putting some Owens Corning up there. But there are diminishing returns. And at some point, it's not worth putting that extra dollar into an energy efficiency project because it's going to take 20 years to pay itself back. And by then, otherwise we'd be doing this in our own homes all the time. What Reggie does is say, we're going to help you pay for those energy efficiency projects that you wouldn't pay for if it were just your own money.
It's hard because there's big upfront costs. I know this just being a homeowner.
Yeah, and you have to match it. And it's essentially a 20% subsidy on energy efficiency. And a project that you wouldn't do if you were just doing it on your own, maybe you do it if somebody gives you a 20% off coupon.
Right. And Jim, go ahead and then some questions.
I want to say Grant's right. Not every project has a payback period, which is why Reggie has a grant process that looks at these things, that looks at the economic impact, that looks at the payback over time, and can make, you know, competitive decisions versus Project A versus Project B, and really get the biggest bang for the buck. That's what the legislation calls for, the Reggie legislation.
That's the Reggie legislation this year?
No, the Reggie legislation that's passed the law, which is really the look for these investments and get the biggest bang for your buck. And so that's what the competitive grant rounds do. They look at projects that have paybacks that are going to make the most economic sense, make the most economic benefit. And those are the projects that get picked. And it's a very thorough process to pick these projects.
Let's take some calls, gentlemen, and a lot more questions for you. Our number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. You can email us, exchange@nhpr.org. First up is Nancy in Concord. Hi, Nancy. You're on the air.
Hi, Laura. Hi, Jim and Grant. This is Nancy Kyle with the Retail Merchants Association. And we were very fortunate to be the recipient of a significant grant through the Reggie Fund. And it's all very nice to say that people can do this work on their own, but it's really hard for a small to medium-sized business to figure out what to do and how to do it and how to go about it. So what this grant has allowed us to do is to be one of the first associations in the country to put together a program for small to medium-sized businesses in our state to help them lower their energy costs. We've had 85 small to medium-sized businesses enroll in our program so far. We're in year 3 of a 5-year grant. And just as an example, I'll take one of our members that went through the program, Young's Restaurant in Durham. He went through the program. He had to put up, we paid about 20% of the rebated through the grant, 20% of his costs. He's going to save $12,000 a year in energy fees and savings, and he's going to reduce carbon emissions by 110,000 pounds annually.
Just him, that one business.
We're also partnering with the Grocers Association, the Auto Dealers Association, so any business can enroll in this. We take the fact that we got this grant very, very seriously, and we're very passionate about it, and we're breaking new ground. Nobody's done this before.
Well, and Nancy, let me ask you a question, and I saw your piece in the Concord Monitor on this, so I'm glad you called. We'll deal with the carbon output with our guests in a couple minutes, but just one more time on this idea of, you know, it's great that that restaurant in Durham got that grant. Great for him, but why should the government say, okay, you restaurant in Durham, you get the money, you, Laura Canoe, with your drafty old house in Concord, you don't?
Well, this particular one has been geared towards businesses. There are residential programs also.
I guess it's the idea, though, of, you know, picking winners and losers. That rubs people the wrong way sometimes.
Well, it's also open to anybody.
Anybody can apply.
Any business can apply. So, you know, they can apply for the, they are automatically accepted into the program. We're here to help them be more energy efficient. the grant has allowed us to work with and give business to the auditors and the contractors that do the work. So, you know, there really are far-reaching effects to the economy.
Well, Nancy, thanks for calling in, and both of you on this. I think, Grant Bossy, you first.
Sure. Absolutely. Retail merchants received over 2 years, $3.3 million to hand out to member businesses. And so their members are getting $3.3 million worth of benefits to do projects that one of two things. Either they would have done on their own and now they get to do more cheaply, or to do a project that they wouldn't have done on their own because it wasn't worth it to them. And that's everything's about trade-offs. And when we look at programs like REGI, we can't just look at who gets a check, because of course they're going to benefit. You can justify any transfer program if you only look at the recipients. What we're looking at is how is this transferred? What are we paying? And what are we getting for it? And are those benefits things that we would have paid for if it had been our own money?
Laura, you've been asking a question that I want to try to answer, which is, you know, why should the government be getting – why is this program here? What's the real benefit? And to take a large step back, you know, one of the highest costs – one of the reasons that energy is so expensive is because there's infrastructure built in order to produce energy. So one of the ideas behind energy efficiency and reducing energy use is that you're reducing the need for more generation infrastructure, which is very expensive. You're building a new power plant. That's a very expensive cost that gets passed on to ratepayers. So one of the reasons why we want to invest more in energy efficiency is over time, these are long-term plans. REGI's not was meant to be a one-year fix. This is a multi-year plan to reduce energy use across the region. Really, so we don't need to build more energy infrastructure. We can lower costs over time. You know, peak energy load becomes less intense, which means costs for all ratepayers go down. So investing in these projects, especially the ones that get large energy reductions from large users, is really important for all of us to understand, because it really impacts all of our electric rates by lowering our costs and lowering the need to build more infrastructure across the region.
And before we go to another call, I'd like to ask you about that, Grant, because that's a point I've heard others make. Some people say conservation is the new alternative energy. You know, forget wind and solar for now. Let's just conserve. And what do you think about Jim's point that when various businesses, town halls, schools, homes gain in energy efficiency, maybe we don't have to build that new power plant?
Chasing energy efficiency as the panacea is just a very short-sighted way to limit economic growth. We're not going to conserve our way into prosperity. Yeah, it'd be great to be more efficient. Market economies are all about finding efficiencies. But efficiencies are something that justify themselves in the market without subsidies. And when we look at how REGI spends its money, yeah, a lot of people are getting benefits in this. Dartmouth College is getting a benefit from this. Stonyfield Yogurt, the town of Jaffrey, the town of Hancock are getting benefits from this. But a lot of this REGI money, well, some of it's just going straight into the budget. Some of it's going to weatherization programs. And some of it's going to reports to say how great REGI is. We gave money to UNH to basically come up with a report to justify REGI. That's not improving energy efficiency. We gave money to consultants and energy auditors to tell people to do things that they probably should be doing on their own. That doesn't increase energy efficiency at all. It feeds this whole green energy sector that exists entirely on government subsidies.
Here's a broader question for you, Grant. What's a better way then? If energy efficiency is a good idea, it saves people money, prevents us from having to build a new power plant, which is expensive and creates more carbon and pollution in the air, what's a better way then than this cap and trade system, than this system of grants? What do you think?
Well, if we make people pay for the costs they impose through pollution,
a
cap and trade
tax
system. No, a cap and trade is perfectly fine. But then handing it out to a group of unelected bureaucrats, very well-meaning bureaucrats at the Public Utilities Commission, to then decide who gets to improve their energy efficiency, you're going to get some perverse outcomes. You're going to get the advisors sitting around the table are the ones that walk away with the money. There's a whole lot of self-dealing going on in the REGI program. Nobody's corrupt. Nobody's trying to do anything wrong. But if the three of us had a pot of money in the middle of this table and we were trying to figure out good ways to spend it to benefit everybody, I bet we'd probably support each other's ideas. And you'd walk away with some, and I'd walk away with some, and Jim would walk away with some. That's exactly what happened with the REGI program.
Laura, I just want to jump in because this has been a complaint that unelected bureaucrats are somehow, you know, patting each other on the back. I mean, the fact of the matter is the REGI grants go out and are approved by executive council. You know, the PUC has a committee that reviews these proposals. The PUC makes recommendations for the grants. The executive council, which are elected officials, sign off on these grants. I mean, they are the – that's where the buck stops, where the money is spent. So it's not a bunch of unelected people making these decisions and handing out checks. There is a well-thought-out process and a very thorough one that stops at the executive council for the grant process.
There are some grants, though, Jim, that do raise questions. I mean, the one that Grant keeps mentioning, you know, Group Danone, a huge French yogurt conglomerate. I mean, why do they need money? Maybe the town of Jaffrey, you can see it, you know, but why would a large conglomerate like that need money for energy
efficiency?
You know, part
of it is to go back and look at the grant that went through. It was a competitive process. But, you know, the legislation calls for the biggest energy reductions for the cost of the grant. So, you know, they were
biggest bang for the buck,
biggest
in other
bang
words?
For the buck. And, you know, while Group Danone is a very large company, you know, their grant that they spent the money on had a big bang for its buck. And
all right. Well, we'll talk more with our callers now. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Jason's calling from Bow. Jason, thanks for hanging on. Go ahead.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just wanted to bring up or ask, what implications does REGI have for small businesses? So, for example, what if I want to start a company that is part of that infrastructure you're talking about? Maybe I want to build wood pellet boilers and bring them into my region. There are available funds there for businesses that are starting that actually apply or build the systems that create energy efficiency.
Or do you have to be an existing business, too? Is
correct,
that what you're asking,
right,
Jason?
Right, yeah. Right, exactly.
So two fronts there. Gentlemen?
Well, first of all, New Hampshire didn't hand out any REGI money this year because they spent it all last year. They did, and we did a story on this a month ago that showed that REGI in New Hampshire was deficit spending. And they spent all of 2011's revenues in their 2010 grants because the markets collapsed. But there is money for existing businesses. You can go to the previous grant recipients that set up revolving loan funds and still have some money left over. I'd recommend the Business Finance Authority, the Retail Merchants Association, the New Hampshire Community Loan Fund are some that pop up. Dread has a separate account to help, and I think new businesses can apply for those as well. So there's existing sources that are operating with REGI money that you could go to if you're a small business.
Jim, did you want to jump in there on Jason's question?
No, it's all right.
Okay. Jason, thanks a lot for calling in. The number 1-800-892-6477. The email is exchange@nhpr.org. Here's a comment that was posted on our website from Steve. He says, the thing that everyone ignores is that every time someone gets involved in moving money around, someone takes a piece of the pie because no one will work for free. There is an administrative cost that comes from somewhere. Who pays for that? What about that, Jim? Just the whole administrative cost of the REGI structure and this 10-state organization.
Sure. So there's a few places. So there's a REGI Incorporated that handles the auction, and it's been found for New Hampshire to allocate its allowances that the most efficient way is through an auction process that the whole region contributes to. So there's a small administrative cost to the sort of region to pay for the auction and to have them administer that. And then there's about a 4% overall administrative cost for the program, which is generally pretty low overall.
And the program got up and running in 2008. Jim, and there's been some talk in recent years of various states dropping out. Just update me. Has anyone dropped out? There's been some discussion. New Hampshire tried to repeal REGI.
That's correct. New Jersey is the state that pulled out of the regional compact and is the only state to have done so.
And so now we should really call it a 9-state.
That's correct.
Interesting. And is there anyone else, Grant, that's looking at possibly dropping out of REGI in this 10-state region? Nine-state region.
Yeah, New Hampshire looked at it. Rhode Island looked at it. Didn't go very far. Maine looked at it. Didn't go very far. So New Jersey was New Hampshire came the closest. The House and the Senate both approved REGI repeal. The governor vetoed. Overridden in the House, two votes shy in the Senate. So New Hampshire came two votes in the Senate away from dropping out of REGI, and that's as close as any state other than New Jersey got last year. And there's kind of been a pullback on the repeal efforts because there was sort of a December 31st deadline, the first 3-year period, ended on December 31st, and we started a new one last week. So that's a new three-year period.
So you're committed now for 3 years.
You could pull out in the middle of that three-year period, but it's a lengthier, more complicated process. It would have been a very clean break to do what New Jersey did and say last week, okay, we're done. It's a little more complicated if New Hampshire wants to get out, say, next year.
Let's take another call, gentlemen. And this is Mark in Portsmouth. Hi, Mark. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for calling in.
No, thank you. Not that I have a strong opinion about it, but the concept that this is somehow market-based is just a dream. You made a good point about picking winners and losers. And then the fellow followed up by saying, but the grants get vetted at the highest levels. That only reinforces your point. It's still just a handful of bureaucrats. I bet you can't tell that I'm... it's not market-based. And
if political decisions are being made.
Yeah, why should you be taking my money? And I don't want to participate in it.
Mark, thanks a lot for calling in. Jim, go ahead.
Well, you know... Energy is sort of an interesting commodity because it's not a clean market. I mean, at all. There's subsidies for all sorts of products in the energy industry. So you know, it's market based in that there's a trading system put in place.
The market based system.
That's correct. To get to lowest cost energy savings that we can.
Did you want to jump in, Grant?
Yeah, we subsidize everything in the energy sector. We overregulate everything in the energy sector. And yeah, we'd love to get rid of subsidies for oil and gas production, subsidies for nuclear. But we also put in barriers to new nuclear plants. We put in barriers to new coal plants. Coal is super cheap. It's really, really cheap, and we have a lot of it in the United States. It also emits lots of things into the air. We've decided that the costs of coal are a certain level, and we've decided that carbon dioxide has costs. That's a policy decision. That's not up to us at the Josiah Bartlett Center to decide. The legislature has decided there's a cost on society for emitting carbon, and we recover that cost through these RGGI auctions, which are fairly efficient, not zero, but 5 to 10% loss in going through this auction process.
All right. Well, Mark, thanks a lot for calling in. And you can join us at 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org.
Folk legend Peter Yarrow put the Peter in Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Light one candle for the Maccabee children. Thanks that their light didn't die.
I'm Kate McNally. Join me for the next Tupelo Public Radio Project. I'll speak with Yarrow live on stage at the Tupelo Music Hall in White River Junction on January 13th and during the Folk Show the following Sunday. For tickets and information, visit the Folk Show page at nhpr.org.
Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, from Jensen Communities, with 6 locations in New Hampshire, including the new Brook Ridge community in Hooksett. One floor living in safe, friendly neighborhoods, JensenCommunities.com. And from McGowan Fine Art, providing custom framing solutions for your art, photographs, and reproductions for over 30 years, on the web at McGowanFineArt.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Canoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, a new year update on New Hampshire's economy. What's your economic outlook for the new year? Email us at exchange@nhpr.org and tune in tomorrow morning, live at 9. Today, we're looking at the continuing debate over the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative and how the legislature might look at RGGI this year. Join us with your questions and comments. Call in 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or email us exchange@nhpr.org. And Grant Bossy, Jim O'Brien, here's an email I want to share with you. This is Marjorie in Hanover, who says, setting aside the economics, please have your guests comment on the effects of RGGI on carbon dioxide emissions. Marjorie, it's a great question, and that's where I'd like to go for the next couple minutes, Jim O'Brien. What about reducing carbon dioxide? That's the whole goal of this thing.
Sure. You know, and RGGI is a modest program. We should start there. I mean, some people accuse of RGGI of, you know, being sort of an environmental pushdown on people. If environmentalists were drafting a carbon reduction program, RGGI probably wouldn't be it. I mean, it's a very modest reduction. It's 10% reduction from one part of the economy, from the power plant sector, over 10 years. I mean, that's the goal of REGI. It's very modest. So it's meeting those expectations. I mean, REGI also doesn't exist in a bubble. You know, there's been an economic downturn which has caused electric rates and also have caused electric usage to go down.
People don't have jobs, they're not driving to work, or they don't have disposable income, so they're not going on vacation.
That's correct. Natural gas has emerged as a much cheaper and plentiful supply, so it's driving down the costs of electricity. It's also driving down emissions. Natural gas is a cleaner burning fuel than coal and oil across the region. And so the more expensive, dirtier plants that are oil-based have been shut down. Natural gas is replacing it, so that drives down emissions. The weather's been a little off. It's been a little bit warmer. And so there's been a decrease in demand on the electric side. So all this combined is reducing total carbon emissions in the region
faster than REGI has.
And REGI's been helped. REGI's a contributing factor, but it's not the only factor for lower emissions in the region.
10% over 10 years isn't very large, as you said. Is it really worth it? All the debate and discussion over the grants and who gets it, and we haven't even gotten into the complexities of how this cap and trade system works. I mean, for 10%, I mean, it's kind of underwhelming.
Well, REGI is a first step. It's a first model. It's the first time in the United States a cap and trade program has existed. If you took the REGI states, it's about the seventh largest economy in the world. The 10 states are now nine states that are part of REGI. So it's a good first step. We have a lot more to go, but it's a quality first step.
Is there any talk of, you know, could we raise the emissions target to 15%, to 20%? I mean, again, otherwise, why bother?
Sure, and that's what this review is about. 2012 is the REGI program review, and that's what the states are looking at. They're looking at ways, you know, is the market too soft? Should we be lowering the cap? So if you lower the cap of emissions, therefore the cost of the allowances, the demand will go up. So that's something that people are looking at. So this is why we're doing the program review, to see what kind of adjustments can be made on the auction, on the amount of allowances that are being sold, and tailor REGI as we move through this to be more effective.
And Grant, on this idea of carbon dioxide emissions, setting aside the grants that we've talked about, are these cap and trade systems, these auctions where carbon credits are traded and bought, are they successful ways to reduce carbon dioxide? What do you think?
Oh, we don't know yet. I don't know if people noticed, the economy slowed down a little, and we started burning fewer dinosaurs. So demand to put carbon dioxide into the air dropped immensely, especially in the Midwest and the Northeast manufacturing sector. So, you know, you didn't have second shift burning the light, you know, keeping the lights on all night and running those factories. So demand for carbon emissions dropped below to the baseline and below the REGI cap, so that the markets for REGI absolutely cratered. The price per ton was up around the $350 range to start. This is what people thought it was going to cost to meet those caps. And it turns out that the cost of staying under the cap was essentially zero, because you weren't going to make it anyway. So you could go out and buy REGI credits at the floor price, which was right now it's $1.89, and the market crashed to that floor price 2 years ago, and it hasn't moved. You haven't even gotten a dead cat bounce off that floor price. If we didn't have the floor price, the price would have dropped who knows how low. It would have dropped to almost zero.
Can you give us a real-world example, or it doesn't have to be real-world, but an example again of Utility A and how its fortunes have changed given this crash in the price of carbon?
Well, for instance, in New Hampshire, there are five plants covered. There are three coal plants from PSNH. There are two natural gas plants that are covered. And those are the only five sources in New Hampshire in the REGI program. So New Hampshire's carbon emissions under REGI are insignificant in terms of global carbon dioxide. It's really more a lead by example kind of thing. But because demand for electricity in New Hampshire, mostly in the business side, has dropped, then these covered utilities aren't going to be exceeding the amount of carbon that they need. They don't need to go to the open market and pay a lot for these credits because things are slow. So nobody's competing for the right to emit carbon because there's less carbon being emitted. The price drops to the floor, and it adds $1.89 per ton to the cost of generating electricity. What that has done is greatly muted the impact on ratepayers. So the effect on carbon dioxide has been non-existent for the first 3 years. The effect on electric rates has been remarkably lower than RGGI opponents have feared. The first 3 years are essentially a wash because RGGI wasn't designed thinking that carbon emissions would go down on their own. What we're going to find out is when the economy recovers, when we start burning more dinosaurs to keep the factory open for a second and a third shift, what happens then to energy prices when there's all this demand, everybody wants to burn more coal and natural gas, but you're bumping up against this cap of carbon emissions. How much will that then add to their electric rates? We don't know. And that's what RGGI opponents fear. It hasn't come to pass in the first three-year compliance period.
Partly because of largely because of the economy.
Because demand isn't there. It also means revenues under the RGGI program have cratered, and states that were handing out lots and lots of money, like New Hampshire, didn't have any money to hand out this year.
Jim, and then back to our callers.
Well, you know, the people that run power plants also understand this. I mean, they buy and sell these allowances, and so they understand the economy's down, and it's a good time to be there. If they had a strategy, this might be a good time to be buying these allowances at a low price, and they know they have to have they can buy future allowances and bank them. So it's, you know, it's hard to tell. I think if the economy bounces back, there is going to be more demand for carbon allowances, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the price to ratepayers is going to dramatically increase. You know, utilities may be buying and banking some of these allowances for future use.
Is there an argument for lowering the cap?
Sure, lowering the cap. There's always an argument. I think this is a carbon program. So if currently our emissions are so below where the cap is going to be, there is an argument out there that the cap should be lowered in order to sort of meet where the demand is.
And is anybody making that argument in New Hampshire or in the other northeastern states?
Environmental groups are making those arguments. And right now, sort of the review process is at the regional level. And they're having those conversations of where the cap should be and how to adjust the auction accordingly.
Let's take some more calls. And let's see, Dan is calling from where? Hi, Dan. Go ahead. You're on the exchange.
Good morning, Laura. I'd like to make a point that seems to be missed in the discussion this morning, and that seems to be the focus being on the cost of carbon and the focus not being on the cost of electricity. Because I would suggest that maybe we could better use the proceeds of the RGGI funds if we focused on companies that are directly involved with producing equipment that produces unsubsidized power, and that companies that are focusing on competing against the existing cost structure, I think, are the answer to this incredibly oversubsidized and unrealistic scenario of trying to prop up alternative energy or solar energy systems that don't work in the marketplace. I think when the cost of alternative energy is a business decision that makes sense and not one that's based on the carbon footprint, which is an obvious benefit, I think we can really make some progress in this field. And I'd have a question for your guests. How do we move the discussion in that direction as opposed to just another iteration of how do we get subsidized funds to come in and fund unsustainable efforts like this?
Dan, thanks for the call. What do you think, Grant?
There is some money that through RGGI that went to things like solar, which for 40 years now has not existed as a commercial industry. It's been a subsidy farm. Solar companies exist only because they get government subsidies. In fact, they exist because there are government subsidies that they can go out and get. Most of the money, though, through RGGI, with, you know, some goes to consultants and energy auditors and all that, you know, green jobs boondoggle stuff that we've been reporting on. Most of it goes to things like new boilers, new pipes, new ducts, new windows, and it's this chase for efficiency that the market wouldn't pay for itself. It subsidized efficiency, which it seems like an odd term if you're a real believer in the marketplace. That's where most of this RGGI money has gone, and that's where the studies that say, look, you increase your efficiency, you get $3 for every dollar you put in.
Or if you increase your efficiency to a greater level, as Jim pointed out earlier, maybe you don't have to build that new coal plant.
Yeah, but and again, we don't know if we've had no demand for new coal plants because we're burning less coal in this down economy. We really don't know if Reggie will work the way its supporters want it to, or if Reggie will cost as much as its opponents think it will, until we start seeing economic growth in the Northeast. That's what Reggie was designed to do. It was contemplating not so much clawing back that 10%, keeping it from growing from the baseline so that carbon dioxide emissions didn't go up 20%, 25%, 35%. That's a permanent cap. We're saying no matter how many people we have, no matter how much energy we use, we're never going to increase carbon emissions. So whether you low at 10% or 15% isn't the point. It's that ceiling that we're going to never emit more carbon dioxide than we have been.
Well, it's so interesting to me, too, that it just shows you Reggie was being discussed in the mid-2000s, really. That was when the discussion was happening heavily and in a completely different economic environment. So once again, this discussion is showing us how much the down economy that continues is affecting so many other programs and policies. But did you want to address also Dan's question, Jim O'Brien, on just, you know, why not put the money towards alternative energies?
Well, in this, you know, I'm going to sort of segue a little bit because this brings up sort of the legislative attempt here and some of the last year's legislation to repeal Reggie and then the Senate's idea to reform Reggie and really opening up a conversation for how these dollars are spent and if there are other ways to spend the money and what are they. And I really hope that's where the conversation is going to be headed this year in the legislature, which is we tried the repeal effort last session. It didn't work, and there was 17 or 19 votes in the Senate to reform the program instead, led by Senator Jeb Bradley. And I'm hoping that's where the conversation goes because I mean, a lot of people around the table understand the benefits and drawbacks of Reggie, and if we can start looking for solutions that everybody can live with that sort of moves the program ahead and maybe has different ways to spend the dollars, I think that's the conversation we should be having.
Okay, and Dan, thanks for inputting onto our conversation here. And as you hear from Jim, that conversation is going to be happening as this review process goes forward in 2012. Let's take one more gentleman. This is Beverly waiting in Temple. Hey, Beverly, thanks for hanging on. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you, Laura. I can speak to an extremely successful Reggie Grant. For our town, for the town of Temple. We had done an energy inventory in our town to see how our buildings, our municipal buildings, were using energy. We discovered we had three very leaky buildings. Our fire department, municipal building, and library were just losing heat like crazy, and our select board decided to have energy audits after that to find out where we were losing the energy and what we might do to save the taxpayers money, to not have to spend so much on our energy bills. So we had professional-grade energy audits. We got all of our data together, and when the Reggie program opened up, we spent endless hours filling out the infinite number of questions and answering and making a proposal that we would involve our residents in a residential energy efficiency program.
And Beverly, I'm so sorry to jump in on you, but in the interest of time, so what was the upshot for
the
Temple?
The upshot was, I just wanted to show there's background. It wasn't these guys sitting there and just deciding, oh, let's give Temple a grant. There was a lot of background. The upshot is we had those three buildings retrofitted, and the library is vastly improved in terms of its energy efficiency. The municipal building and fire department are, when the final blower door tests were done and the field testing was done, they will be saving between 75 and 85% of the carbon load, putting out that much less carbon.
And are they going to reduce
your taxes? Yes,
because
and
of
reduce
those
our taxes. Uh-huh. We're going to be spending about 75 to 85% less on our heating bills. We
okay.
also put 48 workers to work for 4,620 hours of work. It was a wonderful success. And
well, Beverly,
so
I got to let
grateful.
You go, and thank you so much for calling. And both guests want to jump in, Jim and then Grant.
Just very quickly, because this is sort of near and dear to my heart. I'm the chairman of our select board in Hopkinton, and so I understand how much our municipality spends every year on heating fuel and keeping our old drafty buildings, you know, moving forward. And you know, we had a library that was extremely leaky as well, and we did some simple fixes, and we brought our annual cost down from about $22,000 a year on heating fuels down to about $9,000 or $10,000
wow.
per year, which is very significant. So energy efficiency pays off. We're seeing in towns all across the state and in Hopkinton, and that money isn't spent in our budget. That means it's not raised by taxes. That means it stays in our local economy in Hopkinton. So energy efficiency pays off, and I think municipalities are a great place for Reggie dollars to go into because it reduces the cost of the town and also the tax impacts.
The town of Temple, good for them. They spent $332,100 of our dollars, of ratepayers' dollars, for projects that the taxpayers of Temple could have done at any time. There's nothing preventing the town of Temple from making its library more energy efficient. They didn't want to do it with their own money. They wanted to do it with a subsidy from the rest of the ratepayers in the state of New Hampshire. So saying Reggie is inefficient isn't the same thing as saying these aren't good projects. These are great projects. Good for them. If they were so great, why didn't they pass a warrant article the year before?
One last question for you. Jim, I know you hope that the legislature just looks at Reggie, as you said before, during this period of review. Grant Bossy, what do you hope the legislature does with Reggie this year?
I hope they figure out how to hand out that money so they're not picking winners and losers.
So the grant process.
We don't like dedicated funds. We'd rather just put it into the general fund. If it's public money, it's public money. Let it compete with everything else.
All right. Well, both of you, thank you very much for being here. Grant, thanks a lot for coming in.
Absolutely.
Grant Bossy, lead investigator for the Josiah Bartlett Center for Public Policy, editor of the New Hampshire Watchdog site. Jim O'Brien, thank you also for your time.
Thank you very much, Laura.
Jim O'Brien, Director of Government Relations for the New Hampshire Chapter of the Nature Conservancy. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. Our engineer is Craig Martin. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our intern is Emily Johnson. Our executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.